Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, turn on your iPhones or an Android. Let's not narrow the categories here too much. It's time for the This Life podcast. But that, I could have said that better.
And that enthusiastic rendition of Bob Forrest.
Trying to do it his way. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
I want all this to go through.
Yeah, no, you got to leave this in. Yeah, Susan is, coaching me.
Yeah, this is what's part of the podcast. This is Mike Catherwood. He, of course, is my co-host on Loveline and our KBC radio show. And we worked together a long time. People responded very positively to the Chris Cornell conversation we had.
I was like really touched by that.
I could tell.
There's never a time when I do anything of note in broadcasting where it's uniformly positive. There's always people that are, you're a tremendous douche, or how dare you feel that way.
I thought the same thing. It was very, very positive.
I got so much positive feedback, and it was quite touching, you know?
Yeah, because it came from our hearts and our understanding of this condition, and people are trying to make sense of it. Not only from the standpoint of what happened to poor Chris, but also the emptiness he left in people like you and Nay, and you guys explained that in a way I'd never really wouldn't have thought of because I'm not from that generation, and I thought that was pretty cool.
There's something else I thought about after I had left, and that there was obviously at the time I wasn't the biggest Nirvana fan. I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. Now, in my late 20s, I went back and became a Nirvana fan.
Yeah.
But when I was 15, 14, and Nevermind came out, it was just like, oh, these are catchy songs, but I didn't get it. But when Kurt Cobain killed himself, there was like this genuine sense of bitterness. Like he didn't help see. And I know he didn't sign up to be like any voice of the generation or anything, but you got the sense that he was one of these voices of depression and despondency as well. And then for him to kill himself, it was like, well,
let you down.
What are you doing here? So, Chris Cornell was someone who seemingly – you felt like he rose above the fray.
And now we have an autopsy, some toxicology reports. You and I'll talk about that. But let me introduce our guest first. Taylor Williamson.
Oh. Hey guys. Man.
In the middle of that uplifting conversation, let's bring a comedian in.
A stand-up that needs no introduction, Taylor Williamson, one of the greats.
Oh, you're so kind. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just had a flashback to me being on – I did Loveline like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I was so excited. And I have a theory that I was the worst guest who's never thrown up in the studio.
Oh, no.
Because I
never thrown up.
Never like what was the Pennywise guy?
Oh, Fletcher. Fletch threw poo and threw up and did all kinds of interesting things in the studio over the years.
Committed federal crimes.
Yes, he kidnapped us and held us against our will. But that's a conversation for another day. If Mike, if we start doing a regular You Live or something podcast, we'll get into that stuff.
We got to have Fletcher on the show.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
we
although
do two,
I don't want him in my house.
No, we should do two. We should do two Fletcher episodes. One sober in this house, and then meet at a warehouse and force him to drink, and just like chronicle the difference.
And oh my god, we'd have to have like security around.
Sure,
because he's
6'9", every bit of 300 pounds.
But gets scary when he really drinks. He really gets out of his mind. Not his. I don't mean this pejoratively about Fletch. He just gets that.
He's a very crazy, very dark person.
Yeah. What was I going to say about him? And when we first moved into this house where we do this podcast, he came up to me. It was his first time back, I think, in years. I don't think you were. I think it was. Were you there when the first time he came back?
I might have been.
Might have been Adam. First time it was Adam because it was the Poopoo City one. And hey man, he goes, how was the move last week? And I go, we moved into this house. Like, and he like says it very threateningly. He goes, yeah, I got people inside moved you in. They told
me
about
it.
And I was like, apparently his cousin or something moved us in here.
Was there an 8-foot gorilla with a goatee?
There was a guy flag who could lift well, apparently. Yeah. Anyway, so give us your whole CV. Come on now. So people who don't know you.
Crescenta Valley, of course.
No, we got to know. Who's from CV? How about that? I didn't know that.
Like
how we got to know you through the television contest.
I did.
Wait, hold on. What is CV? Like, don't just play that out. Like
curriculum vitae.
Okay.
Like your.
Why would you say that? Like Taylor Williamson or I would have any.
Do you know what a CV is?
But now I'm offended that you think I don't know what a CV is, Mike. What you think I don't
know? Be honest.
Yeah, it's like it's just what it would just.
I saw the look on your face. Don't give me this. I'm offended. You. I looked at you at.
Listen, I don't have to prove myself. I'm very smart. I took Algebra 2 twice.
Nice. That's so you're twice as good.
I'm just twice as I did America's Got Talent, and I lost, but then Susan liked me for some reason.
You lost by one.
I won, right?
You were last round, second runner up, first runner up, right?
Thank you. Most talented American in America.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It was, and what she announced that night, my pointing at our producer, my wife, First Lady of Love, was that this was going to be the same thing as
Michelle Kwan?
No. It was the guy that was runner up that became
Aikens.
Clay Aikens. She said she announced. Oh,
no, I was just joking.
No, because he became. He's still around, really having a thriving career. Can you remember who he lost to?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I think it was Ruben, whatever. But
can we go like Jennifer Hudson or something?
Sure, go Jennifer.
I thought you were saying Taylor reminded you of Clay Aiken because he's a gay politician.
Yeah.
Nope, not that. Just that he has a thriving career.
Yeah. Well, listen, but I appreciate that. Yeah. You mean that in a kind. I took it as
no. It's strictly in the best sense of it.
Well, yeah. Also, you were someone else may have gone on to win that show. I'm as someone who never ever watched America's Got
Jennifer
Talent.
Jennifer Hudson didn't win either, did she?
No, she got like seventh place. Or
no, I see that doesn't fit, right? I think Clay Aikens was first runner up.
Yeah.
So go ahead. I'm sorry, Mike.
I was going to say
that I just don't want to be like compared to Clay Aikens.
I know.
He's like, no, you're Clay Aikens.
Well, who's
he's listening. I think it's wonderful.
Who's the country broad? She has a huge career.
She didn't win, did she?
Garth Brooks.
No. The hot blonde.
Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood. Did she win?
I think she won.
I've never watched any of these shows.
Steve Martin didn't win.
That is true. You know what? Albert Brooks never won America's Got Talent or American Idol.
So there you go.
You know? So you
got
that.
You could be talented and thrive without
winning. You know who else? Hitler. Never won.
He didn't even get to the finals. He's such a loser.
But what I was going to say is, as someone who never watched any of those reality shows, I didn't hear the person who won. I know you well before you came on Loveline, and you were the winner in the hearts of people who were really funny. I mean, guys like Stern and guys like Dr. Drew were coming back immediately. They're like, this is Taylor Williamson. Kevin and Bean came on the air. They're like, that guy who didn't win, though, he's got a huge career. It's going to be.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. You don't know that people were saying that?
No, it's very. It's nice. But you know, I'm an insecure, weirdo Jewish comedian, so I have a way to prove you wrong for everything you just said. Yeah. Like, you're like the guy who won. What's he doing? I'm like, he lives in Japan. he makes like $30,000 a show doing 7-minute corporate events.
Fun.
But listen. But you're right. He's never been invited on your show.
Right. No. I don't know who it is.
He's never been to Dr. Drew's house.
No.
He's at some cafe petting a cat. underwear.
So where are you now? Where can we find you? Give us all the vitals.
I'm at Taylor Comedy on Twitter and Instagram, and at the Taylor Comedy on Snapchat.
TAYLOR.
TAYLOR. And I'm on tour. I tell jokes. I travel.
Anywhere people can see you coming up?
I'm at the Addison Improv in Texas.
Okay.
In a couple of weeks, and then I'm at the Irvine Improv in July,
that's cool.
At the Caboo Comedy or the Music Festival in Del Mar, Caboo Del Mar. They have like Aerosmith, and then they have comedy.
Then you have you.
I mean, I've said it since I can, as far back as I can remember. It's Aerosmith, Taylor Williams.
I just think Steve
Tyler. 1-2 punch.
When I say Steve Tyler, I think Taylor Williams.
It's like
for real. You're not just saying that.
I'm just saying that.
You ever hear the stories of Bobcat opening up for Nirvana?
No.
It's just like, well, he's just terrified because you're like, no matter if I kill, I mean, no one wants to hear me right now.
Corolla had a story. It's one of the reasons I want to go do Insane Clown Posse. I want to see what
the festival. Yeah.
The gathering of the juggalos.
I really want to go.
No, you don't.
They'll pay you lots of money to go.
I don't have to be paid. I would.
You don't want to go.
I hear it's dangerous. That's the only thing.
Well, no, you know what? At least from the video footage I've seen like a YouTube documentary and stuff. I actually am quite impressed by it because it's really they have their own world.
That's why I
want
to go. I love the guys.
And I think there's a big margin of error where the crowd will love you, because as long as you're down with ICP, you're down with them. Until it's a big margin of error, but once you make that error, it's bad. You might not make it out of there alive.
No,
they may just bury you in some field in Pennsylvania.
Well, my thinking was that it's so counter me to be at a Juggalo festival, you know what I mean, that they would appreciate the effort. And certainly the boys, you know, Violent J, were very enthusiastic.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're legitimately friendly with you. Yeah, I mean, like, you get along with them.
I think they're great. They're something else. They're so unique.
Let me tell you why Dr. Drew is so weird. Because his favorite celebrities, there's like, if you were to put 10 up there, 5 of them would be totally predictable. And then there'd be 5 where you're like, what? How on earth is that?
I like people that are not me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like being around people that are very, very different than myself. I like it. Even if they're sort of got problems, I mean, I feel bad for them, but I still admire them.
I certainly don't glorify having serious problems, especially with drugs and alcohol or anything. But there's people that do it well, like and Violent and Shaggy do it well. Like, you know what I mean? Because there's no defensiveness. There's no, like, they're like, yeah, well, you know,
it's
don't.
Kind of like Doug Stanhope a little bit.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And you sort of admire it. It's like, that's just, he's just who he is, and he's who he is. And but that, you know, we're going to talk to somebody on another show where the guy said, he goes, you know, you treated me in such and such a date, and I'm sorry I didn't really take then. But he goes, I did go do some more research, which is a common saying in recovery. And these guys are all doing research, and good on them. I don't decide when people get sober. You know what I mean? That's theirs.
Top 3 favorite Loveline guests is ICP.
I was going to say, who's your favorite, interesting people? Quote, interesting, I
like,
guess.
Like Artie Lang.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I love him.
Right. And who else?
You love Louis.
Louis C.K.
You'd blow Louis.
Yeah, but I don't know him. But you think of people we know that I know that we've had on the
Nick,
show.
Nick, you love Nick.
Nick Schwartzen.
Yeah. I was so excited, by the way, when I tweeted I'm listening to your show, and then I'm listening to your KBC show, and then you're like, oh, Taylor just
of course. Well, he's like he's a brooder with a jeweler's loop out watching the internet while we're on the air.
But I love that you're like, oh, Taylor just tweeted us. Oh, we should have him call out. And then Mike, you're like, no, we don't have time for him to call in.
Well, Drew,
I have Tourette's.
I'm sitting in the Chipotle parking lot, be like, this is amazing. My narcissism rates are going up like crazy.
Drew's big Achilles heel in radio and in entertainment in general is the same reason why Trump has such problems as president, is that Drew's used to being a doctor where he calls the shots because he's saving people's lives. And damn it, why would you get in his way? He's making the decision. This is a clinical decision. If I feel like I'm going to take an extra hour with this patient, so be it. This is what's best for the patient. So that doesn't translate into radio where seconds matter. Drew's like, well, we can go over by 10 minutes in this commercial break. Have Taylor call.
It's even more specific. It's if things are interesting to me, I assume they're interesting to everybody.
Right.
Then that's, you know, I want to talk to Taylor. I want to talk right now. Let's get do it. Everybody would love Taylor. Let's get talk to Taylor. And he's like, dude, we're going to commercial in 2 minutes. All right. So
I think it's happening again right now.
Yeah. I know. My wife's waving at me.
Our executive producer. She's
totally fucked up that.
She's reminding us that Kathy Griffin is somebody I like and admire and stuff too, and she got herself in a big shitstorm recently. Did you have any thoughts about that?
Bill Burr he said it the best. He said, "I think she was she's trying to be controversial. She fucking overachieved."
That's so good.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I don't have any. Tremendous respect for her and stuff, and this is not hating on her, but the argument people are making is, she's a comedian. She was doing a joke. It went too far. I don't think she was doing a joke, though.
Right.
And I don't. I respect a comedian. Like
there are several defenses you can make of Kathy, which is her job is to be offensive and push the limits. And maybe she took this artistic expression more in the vein of comedy than people can tolerate. Even though it wasn't a comedic statement, it was an artistic statement, right? Maybe the photographer convinced her to do stuff she shouldn't have done.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And I blame the echo chamber of Hollywood, where Kathy could easily believe that everybody that I know.
Yeah, well, you know, she totally. I agree that she totally easily could believe that. Every single celebrity, whether you're A-list or Z-list, you have a personal choice to remove yourself from that chamber. There's plenty of. I can go down the list of Tom Hanks, Jeff Bridges, people who make an effort to, whenever they're not filming, they go back into real world and they deal with people as opposed to get off stage and fly back to my penthouse in Manhattan and only talk to the most liberal people who've never left the island of Manhattan ever.
Speaking of which, did you see his tweet, the Tom Hanks tweet that made a bunch of traction last week with that building? He put a picture up of and said, "What goes on in this building?"
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I was looking right out at that building last real? Week. I was in New York, and that building it's in Tribeca, it's in SoHo.
What is
and
going on? In that
it's
building?
A communication. It's like an AT&T building or something. It's nothing. It's no fun. It's right in the middle of nowhere. It's like Wall Street. You know, it's like, but it does look a little ominous.
I thought it was weird, like hedge fund orgies.
No,
like secret Illuminati. Orgies.
But back to this issue of living in this the coastal bubbles,
yeah.
Right? Which is why Mr. Trump got elected, is because people live in those bubbles that create media.
Totally.
And they start believing what their peers are saying and what they're thinking and that no one else has any alternative point of view. And I can easily see how Kathy not just convinced herself, just thought people would think this was great.
Right.
Now, I don't think any of those things. I think, in fact, it's all not good. I don't agree with what she did, but I'm supporting Kathy. In the same way, I would. This is not a free speech issue, but I would support her in this way. You've heard me give this argument already. Mm-hmm. The way I would anyone else, the speech you hate the most, the speech you got to support the most, right? So this is to me a similar phenomenon because what I hate more than what Kathy did is the mob reaction to it. The way she was treated by social media to me is like unconscionable. It's a dangerous mob out there now that's harming people. This is what happened in France in 1790. You know what I mean? If somebody doesn't stand up, I mean, we got a problem here.
It's strange that because there is something called Twitter, people assume that they're like the court of public opinion has now become real. Because there's a tangible court of public opinion where you can actually see what you're writing.
But they're having an effect. People are losing their livelihood. Totally. And then with Kathy, she'd already lost her livelihood and they kept going. Right, I don't think she should have gone the offensive.
Do you think
she
lost her livelihood? Was she,
well,
she,
I mean, she lost some jobs.
Right?
She lost some jobs, not her livelihood.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I don't know. You know, she lost CNN. She lost a sponsor, and she lost some shows.
Here's the thing, though.
Hurting.
I mean, I frankly, and no one else in America should really quote unquote care. She's a comedian who's trying to do something to get attention and be controversial. So,
right.
You know, honestly,
that's
so
right.
What? What I did care about is that she then went on the
offensive.
How can everybody be bullying me when we're not talking about Jim Gaffigan? We're not talking about, you know, Sinbad. This is a lady who has made her career destroying people. She walks around going, "I don't even know you. I hate your dress. You suck. You're fat."
You know, Howard Stern's afraid to have her in his home,
right?
Because of what she'll then say.
She's open about having parties, inviting certain people just so that she can get ammunition to then destroy them.
Yeah.
Come on, you know, what are you doing here with the bullying? Give me a break. And by the way, for once, I thought Donald Trump was rather restrained.
I know he was. Yeah, I thought.
He said, I'm a little disappointed in her. She should be ashamed of herself.
Are anybody saying anything on Facebook Live? Because I'm happy to take feedback on this.
Taylor probably should talk too. But
this is why I say why I thought I was a horrible Loveline guest is because I forget that I'm on. Like,
you just start listening.
Because I've listened to you guys forever.
Yeah, start listening to the show.
It's like, oh yeah, this is. What,
well, he's a comedian.
But I feel like I have so much to say. What happened in France in 1790? That's my
French Revolution.
Oh, that's what, I knew that. I knew that too.
Just like CV.
Totally knew. I've listed things.
There was a guillotine, and the modern guillotine is the lose your job.
Right? I see.
And I'm fearful that it's going to get more violent, more crazy.
But you know what's interesting? The comedians, like you said, like Tom Hanks, Jeff Bridges, people who like. Well, I don't know if this is the same point, but. What's my point? Like Howie Mandel, he doesn't post anything about anything political.
Right. Yeah.
And most of the comedians who played in Middle America, in the sense that like every political view would come see them, they don't talk about stuff like that.
Yeah.
But also because they experience stuff like that. Like Bill Maher or Kathy Griffin, not judging their comedy, but they're pandering to their audience.
Sure.
They're not playing towards
Middle America.
I mean, they go to Nashville, but they're playing for the liberals in Nashville.
Yeah, in the same way, Larry the Cable Guy is a character pandering to another demographic. She and Bill Maher is another good example. They do the same.
What
you
about
know,
Bill's thing?
Every single super lib in every town is going to go see Bill Maher when he goes on tour, and God bless him. And same with Kathy. Every gay guy and you know, like theater kid. In every town, is still going to go see Kathy Griffin.
Bill's another guy that I disagree with a lot of stuff he does and says, but I still stand with him because
yeah.
He's never inconsistent.
Yeah.
He's just, this is him. He's thoughtful. He thinks a certain way. He calls out a certain kind of stuff. And I admire his courage and just consistently doing that. He got in big trouble back with ABC. Remember when he said that the guys that flew the planes into the World Trade Center. They weren't cowards. That, to me, is classic Bill Maher. That's like, are people surprised by that?
Well, and Bill Maher.
And I support. I called him when that happened. I called Kathy when this happened. I said, I'm with you.
Bill Maher is an example of a guy who walk it like he talk it.
Yeah.
In the regard that I remember when Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the guys like this, who clearly are polar opposites of what Bill Maher thinks politically and socially, when they got in hot water for something that they said, he was one of the first people to come to their defense.
Yeah, right.
You can't just start.
I admire people that just are super intellectually honest and consistent. But what about the N-word thing he did?
Well, listen.
Taylor. Taylor on this.
I was going to say Bill Maher, he's like a guy trying to play the high jump out of a hole. He's dug himself a bigger hole because, I mean, he may be a fine guy. I don't know him. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but he's not likable. Bill Maher's not a likable guy. You don't just watch his show. You don't watch Real Time and you're like, hey, I'd love to hang out with him.
He's
very smug.
It's very interesting because in person, Susan, what do you think? You met him many times. In person, he's very likable.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
It's very weird.
That's fine.
Well, let's see what she thinks. That's sort of me. What do you think?
Not
so much, I guess.
Well, I like Bill, but he's very different than us.
Yeah.
I mean, he has different opinions.
Yeah,
but he's
like
so
that.
Successful. And he's great. He's been a great, you know.
You've socialized with him,
he's cool. I mean, he's always high.
There is that. He's much better when he's high.
But I don't care. Whatever. I mean, I'm not. I mean,
the answer.
He likes young women. You know, I don't know.
Send your tweets and letters to.
He was best friends with one of my best friends, and that's how we found each other.
Right,
so
right.
It was, you know, you became friends with him because of me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
You know, once again.
If you want a piece of advice here. If a woman doesn't automatically, immediately deny something, that means she's telling you the truth and that she will support whatever that is. For instance, yes, she's, Bill Maher, nice guy, right? If a woman goes, that's no. If you go, hey, you ever done anal? Any girl who's never done anal goes, no, whoa, whoa. If there's a, well, that's yes, okay. That's yes. Trust me, that is.
That's a very good point.
Never in the world of any, like, dangerous question has a woman had to go, well, let me, there's always a, whoa, no, I don't, come on, I'm not like that.
I want to make some phone calls after this. Well, did you see Bill Maher's last show where he discussed this?
I heard about it. I didn't see any of it.
I did see that Ice-T got a bunch of negative tweets, and he's like, wrong Ice, dumb bitches, because it was Ice Cube.
Right.
A bunch of people are like, how dare you take that stance? He's like, do we all look that close to the same? Because he's like 5 feet shorter than me.
Ice Cube, he did throw out to Bill, like, joking but not joking, like, yeah, you dated a lot of black women, but you can't say that just because you feel like you
can't.
Well,
that was somebody who was taking that position.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying, no, just don't use that word. Especially don't use it casually, and don't use it. And the only defense I could see was he was using it in kind of a weird historical context. You know, that's a title of something. But even that, I have been schooled, my African-American friends, just don't. It's a word that has deep, deep injury.
It wasn't really a historical. He was making reference to something that was said in the antebellum South. Doesn't necessarily make it a historical reference.
But it's a proper name of a historical thing. You know what I mean? And I still think it doesn't trump saying it, the fact that that's an accurate name. And it's packed with all kinds of meaning, too. I mean, you'd have to almost explain yourself if you don't use that term. You have to go, well, there are these certain guys that did this. Here's what people felt about them, and they were sort of this skin and that. You know, people, I think, know what that name means, but it still shouldn't be.
People are also recreationally offended, though. I mean, I think anyone who even watched it on replay recognizes, like, Bill Maher doesn't – he's not a bigot. He doesn't wish any harm to people because of the color of their skin. He was trying to make a joke, and – he screwed up. It's a live show, and that's a big difference between like Michael Richards just like screaming the N-word at black guys at his crowd. You know, there's a totally.
But this goes at the reason I'm supporting Kathy, which is that you're not allowed to make a mistake.
right?
Or to be schooled on something. My thing always is like, hey, know who your allies are, and if they make a mistake or they misspeak, go ahead and correct them. And happily, I would do so if I were allied with somebody. But you're not allowed.
Taylor brought up a good point, though. I mean, this is a guy who gets a paycheck to be a stand-up, so I'm sure you have a much more valuable opinion. There, you make a conscious choice as an artist, as a stand-up, to go in that territory or not.
Have you stepped on landmines?
Daniel Tosh didn't decide to, like, all of a sudden wake up and become offensive. He made a choice. Gilbert Gottfried and Dave, you know, when you're getting into that territory, you're going to work like that. It comes with certain consequences, you know?
I got accused of being racist at a college like 8 years ago.
Really?
There's just one girl in the front row of an orientation. The first day of school. It's her first day of school. Artie Lang just did an article, but Chris Rock, every like 2 years, some famous comedians like saying, well, they don't do college campuses anymore because it's so PC, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And it was like a cafeteria, 200 kids. I did like 2 hours. Like I stayed longer. Like we were all having fun. And then I told these jokes like in the middle of the set, whatever. And then kids were like leaving throughout slowly, but I make jokes about it. I'm not being offensive, but they're like, oh yeah, I have homework to do, or I have a club to get to. It wasn't like I'm leaving on a protest. Just because they're slowly leaving. So then I get an email from my college agent saying what happened, and they sent me like a copy of the email. They're saying you were racist against. Can you tell me what happened? That you were racist against African Americans, Jews, and Mexicans. I'm like, what?
At least you didn't hold back. At least you didn't discriminate.
What had you said?
Well, first of all, I'm Jewish, and I'm not like Jews. You know what I mean? Like I'll make self-deprecating humor. You know. And then I had some joke about.
Wait a second, a self-deprecating Jewish comic? Come on,
can you believe
this?
It
is groundbreaking.
it was some school in Columbus, Ohio, and like it was Capital University. I don't know. Shout out
Xavier or something.
I don't know. But so then I had a joke that
Columbus,
Kent State.
Columbus is
I think
Ohio
it was Capital University.
Ohio State is in Columbus too.
Yeah, I'm not cool enough to go there. Okay, thanks. Okay. My grandpa and great-grandpa went there, though.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Four Dead and Nixon's coming? Is that – I don't know. That's in Ohio.
O-H.
I-O, yeah.
There you go.
They do that. They have to do it. It's like a law.
It's weird when you say it when you're in front of a big audience there. Their hands go up, too.
They love it.
It goes crazy.
They're not like, I-O. They're like, ha, ha, ha.
They go nuts.
They're like, fuck yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't go to college. I'm like when I hear stuff like that, I'm like, I'm really happy I just bypassed that bad boy.
Well, so my joke, and I'm like, deconstructing humor, there's nothing less funny, and like it makes everything sound not funny. And I'm not even saying this is a funny joke, but it's a joke that worked that if you analyze, it's not whatever. So
By the way, I disagree. Whenever I hear chefs deconstruct how they – no, I'm not even kidding. Hearing – even if it's an musical artist I don't like, hearing how they came up with writing that song, I'm fascinated by hearing how a comedian came up with it.
It may not be funny, but it's interesting.
I'm riveted by that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you.
All right, tell us after the break. We'll take a quick break. Right back, Taylor Williamson, Mike Cathwood after this. We are proud to welcome a great new sponsor, Integrity Care Card. This is a service that was started by a recovering addict who actually was a patient of Bob's at one time. Integrity Care Card. It's a refillable debit card that lets you provide financial support to someone you love without the risk of misuse. It's a great idea. That's how it works. Simply sign up. You deposit the funds onto the card. Share it. Through your Integrity Care Card account, you can keep track of the spending habits and receive real-time spending alerts and block purchases from places like liquor stores, casinos, ATMs. People in recovery often need help making responsible choices with their money. So the Integrity Care Card is a fantastic way to offer support without denying them the independence they deserve. It's a great parenting technique. Come on now. It's better than cash. Better than gift cards. This is a true debit card that can make a real difference in someone's life. I love this idea. So if you or someone you know is supporting a loved one in recovery or trying to structure your financial relationship with, say, a child or something, check out Integrity Care Card. Visit integritycarecard.us. Click the banner on doctor.com or call 888-216-4680, 888-216-4680. Or integritycarecard.us. It's a great idea. Now, one of the most amazing parts of working in treatment is seeing a number of former patients successfully move on and choose to become mental health professionals themselves. Yes, I've seen it. And the field of psychology is vast, and the need for competent practitioners has not been greater and never been greater. If you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you look at the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've been familiar with Alliant for some time now. I've spoken at their events. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Faculty is industry leaders. Former faculty includes names like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl. Come on now. Those are names everyone's heard, some of the fathers of modern psychology. For more information on the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, check the Alliant banner on my site or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu. That is Alliant.edu. All right, we're back. Taylor Williamson, you were telling us about deconstructing.
Hey, please tell us your racist joke from 8 years ago. But I had a joke where I said, I lived on a street called Knickerbocker, and like it's a horrible joke, but the joke was bad on purpose. That was what was the joke? It was like, sometimes I'm bored, I like to change the CK and change it to a double G.
That's funny.
So people say, what street do you live on? I go, I live on Knickerbocker.
Oh.
Which is, it's just, and then.
Obviously, we were thinking of the other.
Yeah, and then I go, what were you guys thinking? And I played on that.
It's very funny.
Thanks. It's just silliness. Right?
Yeah.
And then another joke I said, a bit about being in college, and the comedy is truth, then you exaggerate it. So my roommate in college, first day, he's like, are you Mexican? And then that's truth, so then I exaggerate. So then in my joke, I go, how could you be Mexican? Look at me. And then I look at my hand, and then I go, I'm in college.
Thank you,
my Mexican friend laughing. But on paper, I mean, listen, you can say that joke, whatever. The joke is the misdirection,
yes, the
whatever.
Misdirection, yeah.
And the
surprise.
I'm making fun of myself. I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever. But on paper, it's just, how could I be Mexican? Look at me, I'm in college.
Right.
So there's just a whole transcript of just like, Taylor's a racist, horrible person, and like. Anyways, I haven't gone back.
Well, like you said, I mean, you show up to a college in blackface doing the Al Jolson. I totally understand how you get ran off the campus, but that's 9 times out of 10 not what's going on. There's these very innocuous jokes, and I think kids at that age, especially this generation, when you're in college, you think if I get up and protest or if I write some email, it somehow makes me
right.
A part of the solution,
right?
And
hubristic.
And you go, wait.
It's hubris. It's absolute hubris.
I said it's like it's like saying you're an animal rights activist because you're a hunter with a bad shot.
Yeah,
doesn't you know just because you happen to miss all the animals doesn't make you any more
really
caring than I am.
I mean, can you imagine being in high school or college and sort of somebody's on stage and you start hassling them or leaving? Or
I just can't imagine adults at all caring what I had to say
right.
when I was 19 years old. I don't understand this world you would assume at 19 that anyone gives a shit what you have to say. Because I certainly at that age, and I was a pompous prick that was addicted to drugs and just try my best to sleep with everyone I could. And I knew for a fact like society as a whole doesn't care what I think. Like that was embedded into my head.
Something would be wrong with society if they did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's and unfortunately I want to hear from 19-year-olds, but let's put it in the context in which it's being received from children.
I want to hear it from 19-year-olds if I'm at dinner with them. If I'm at dinner with their parents and they happen to be sitting there, I'd be like, so what's going down? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I do want to hear about
but
it.
But I feel like you need to start feeling the propensity to try and rule the world because you don't.
So there's a bunch of other stuff in the press lately. Of course, Tiger Woods was found just pre-comatose, really. He was really disorganized. He was stumbling. He was, really obtunded. Not unwakeable, but sort of near obtundation. And you have to do a lot of drugs to get that way.
That's how I described it, by the way. He was obtunded.
Yeah.
Of course.
Stop using all these words I know.
CV.
Like it's.
And he.
He talks about hubris, by the way.
French Revolution, whatever that is.
Obtunded.
but he said he was on Vicodin. He also named 3 other anti-inflammatories he was on. And it's funny, my friends that are opiate addicts all go, oh, yeah, I used that excuse a million times. I had a medication reaction, which is what he said he had.
Of course.
Reaction pharmaceutical medication, which is indeed true. He did have reaction pharmaceutical medication. We don't know which ones yet, because Vicodin will not do that to you, as hunted as he was, as out of it as he was. He's not drinking alcohol. He didn't admit to any benzodiazepines, which I think you're going to find. I think he took Vicodin, and he's in bad pain, and he's got all these anti-inflammatories on board, and he took some sleeping medicine, and literally sleptwalked, got in the car, and drove.
It happens.
I think that's what happened. I really do.
I told you about when I used to be a personal trainer back in the day, I had a female client who was really worked really hard, and she was trying so hard to like get that summer body, and she kept gaining weight, and she didn't know why until one day she got evidence of the fact that she was taking Ambien to fall asleep, and she was eating during her sleep and had no idea. And it was not until she left boiling eggs on the stove and woke up to like smoke in her house that she even realized she was doing it.
And well, then, at least she was choosing dietetic stuff.
Yeah, no, but how scary is that you would that you would eat that frequently on a drug?
You can do anything on those drugs.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Can you rape?
Yeah.
And then you get away with it?
Well, the people argue.
Like, can you? Wait a second.
I'm interested.
There's a whole conversation about sleep sex.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's asleep and starts pushing themselves on their partner who happens to be sleeping next to them, is that rape?
Yeah. It's tough.
It's a tough one.
Well, the reason I ask that, I know it sounds like an odd question, but I'm thinking to myself, if you can get up and prepare, we're not talking about she just put some ice cream. She was making meals and not remember it.
Yeah.
What else would you do? I mean, that's pretty complex stuff to be doing in a blackout.
We have a call on the hold? Oh, good. We have a call here. Nice. Somebody wants to talk with us.
Hold on a second. I got it.
Tiger Woods, real quick, the funny thing to me is that they're like, he had a very unexpected reaction to this medication. I was like, not really that unexpected to him. Trust me. You take 25 Vicodin, you know what you're getting yourself into.
Well, but if you take a bunch of Vicodin, you're not going to go drive your car.
Yeah.
That seems more ambient.
I mean, especially,
he's had a problem with the ambient in the past, apparently.
Yeah.
I've woken up and then I looked in my cabinet and there was an ice cream container in the, like a carton. Is it a carton? Is that what ice cream is? A carton?
Sure.
It was in the cabinet. Is that a
good All melted?
Yeah. And then I've woken up, like, I've gone to sleep with, these terrible stories, by the way. They're very quick, though. And then I've gone to sleep without a shirt on, you know, I'm really cool. And then, very sexy. And then,
thank you.
And, correct, but thank you. It's a fact more than a compliment. Yeah. You know? And then, but then I woke up with a hoodie on. But no drugs, though.
Fascinating story.
But why? Is this good?
I think Drew's being sarcastic.
No, one of our sons sleepwalks, too. And he does
is that sleepwalking?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take a call. So we're going to say goodbye to Facebook because they can't hear the call, so they'll have to listen to the podcast. Facebook.
Is there anybody want to make comments or anything? Any
no, we got to take the call. We're kind of running behind.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for watching. Arthur, how are you, my friend? Arthur?
Oh, hey. It's a huge honor to be talking to you guys. I've been listening to you guys since your Love Line days, which, by the way, that sounds weird. Like, I've been listening to you since your Love Line days. Like, but, I have a brother. He's living at home. He's older than me by 4 years. He's roiding out, doing a bunch of drugs, prescribed a bunch of stuff. He's getting really aggressive at the house.
Uh-oh.
My parents are... They've had enough. They got the courts involved. State troopers are going to come. Like, he doesn't know any of this, but as soon as my brother's kid leaves my parents' house to go back to baby's mama house, the state troopers are going to swoop in and kick him out of the house.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Where are they going to kick him out to, though?
Coincidentally, like, also accidentally, like pure out of coincidence, me and him have the same psych. We both go to the same VA. And so I guess, how do I bring up to my doctor, like, yo, my brother's roiding out and like smoking hash oil. And how do I keep this narrative or, you know, support my parents? And also, if I ever get a chance to talk to my nephew, like years down the line, like, hey, like, we weren't the bad guys. Like, we were just... You know,
well,
feel really bad.
Hopefully, your brother will get some kind of recovery by then. But let's talk about what could and should be done. First of all, that you share the same psychiatrist, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That doctor wants to know this, so you just go, look, you got to know about my brother right now. Here's what's going to happen, and we may need your help. That's all. That's all you got to tell him. And you need to know he's doing illicit drugs, including steroids, and it's making him violent and psychotic. He's a drug addict. And by the way,
yeah.
So now tell me what the medicines are the psychiatrist has him on.
He has them on. I have pictures, but I know just from like listening to you and like my own experience, it's a benzo for sure.
Yeah.
Amphetamines for ADD.
No, see, that's all got to stop.
Something.
That's all got to stop. All the stimulants.
He's gonna die, dude.
Yeah, stimulants, or he's gonna kill himself or somebody else. That's even more concerning. So the stimulants and the benzos have to. He needs to go somewhere for treatment. So that's my next question, which is why don't your parents do an intervention? Why? Have they tried before?
Maybe they're scared.
Is he that
giant?
I'm actually super glad that Mike's here because I'm Mexican, and they absolutely do not. They hate doctors. Like my mom says, she has a cure for HPV, which is like a shot of tequila and like natural honey.
Yeah, mango. Your grandma rubs mango juice in your asshole to cure influenza.
Mango, avocado, and cactus. Right?
Yeah. Some type of cactus, sea salt, and cilantro.
You know, Rudy's
puree.
Never been on the show. Maybe we should call him.
Hold on, he might come by. But this is this is a very serious issue. Yeah. But he's totally right. It's not the different than. There's a lot of ethnic cultures here in America that are the same way, that it's not only the very real Mexican kind of aversion to Western medicine. It's an aversion to anything regarding mental health because that's woo-woo nonsense. You just got to suck it up.
Well, to some extent, I understand to some extent there's no changing that, but I still put that responsibility to manage that situation squarely in the doctor's lap. And so from my standpoint, it's bullshit. Somebody's got to step in here and do what's right.
Well, and also,
if you had cancer and they weren't letting him get treatment, it's like, sorry, we're going to do this. That's the way it goes.
You and your family have to recognize it with full clarity that you're going to have to make him very angry to get him to a place of any type of peace of mind. You're not going to do this and currently keep him on your good side. In order for him to get the help he really needs, you can't listen
matter.
To what he's what – his feelings right now don't matter.
Right.
And I know that sounds counterintuitive because he's the one who needs help. But for him to get the help he needs at this situation, you guys are going to have to play rough.
And there are people that specialize in helping with this kind of thing. You know, people can really help you get through this. And I'm sure have dealt with the denial, cultural denial, and all that kind of stuff you're describing.
I was at a meeting the other day and I heard someone speak that had their parents called the cops on them.
That's what's going to happen here. I don't object to that. By the way,
I don't either.
I'm fine with that. But then you have to do something that helps him.
I started going to Al-Anon.
Oh my god, fantastic!
An old best friend who went down to he went down the painkiller route.
Yeah.
And I stopped talking to my brother because I saw this coming. I already saw he tried to like approach me to be like, hey, dude. You want to like do some testosterone? I was like, no.
Well, let's not rush to judgment.
That's Mike's favorite drug. How much is he doing, by the way? Because some of this may be a steroid psychosis.
I have no idea, but like my parents, like there's two extra layers of complication. He has an AR-15 in the house.
Oh no!
He's got so like I just like snooped around a little bit in my parents' house, which by the way. He's living for free. My parents are feeding his kid.
Of course.
He's collecting unemployment and benefits, and he says he has no money. Anyway, we found vials and vials and syringes. We found, like, shards of it's almost like if Psycho Mike didn't get in recovery and live with his parents and had, like, that no shame of, like, Mom! Get out of my testosterone.
That's pretty much mine.
That's how I deal with my mom and beating off still to this day.
What? Oh, you don't know that? Well, explain to Taylor real quick.
Hold on. We have a very serious call. We'll deal with that
Arthur's
later.
Arthur's good-natured about it.
I am not one who's ever going to speak out and say that roid rage is going to be the cause of all this problem, but it certainly helps.
Well, no. I don't want to misstatement.
Yeah.
He may be in a roid psychosis and roid rage.
Yeah.
That may be the immediately dangerous problem. He's also a severe drug addict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even though he's 30-something and still living with mom and dad, he's relatively young as far as his entire life goes.
Yeah.
And you know, just to understand, Arthur, because you do. You definitely sound like a guy who's way ahead of the average galler about a loved one who's got an addiction problem.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to Al-Anon. But when time comes to actually, you know, put into action the call of duty here with taking care of your brother, you're going to piss him off. And I don't think enough people, when it comes to requesting an intervention or really drawing the line in the sand when it comes to their loved one with addiction. They like they're still in the back of their head this idea that you can do it and stay be friendly. Yeah. And it's not like that. You got to really piss them off, you know?
Yeah.
Well, me as his little brother who's picked on his whole life, for me, I am foaming at the mouth to piss him off.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, you know, I talk to my partner a lot. It's like I got to also cool it because I think for me, I'm thinking so much about my nephew who's also living with us and in the middle of all this chaos. Because, oh, by the way, his mom is also a severe addict in she's up the painkillers route. And I just want my mom to like not feel like she has to live with this asshole every day.
Yeah. So,
you know, that's my number one.
Well, it was so good that you're setting your priorities in all this because you can't control what he does or does not do. So you ought to have those priorities straightened out, including considering things like custody of that child for somebody else. I'm just saying, just for the time being at least. But you know, it sounds like a situation where the it's so dangerous, it's probably right just to get him out of the house and away from that weapon. What's that?
What about the guns?
So I say get him out of
the house. Well, that's why the state troopers are coming. Don't they clear out all the guns when they...
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but get him out of the house, get him away from the gun. That's priority one. That's priority one.
Yeah, because if they're legally owned, it's hard. You can't just take it.
You have to then go...
taking a guy's gun.
Then you got it. And by the way, do not forget to tell the psychiatrist you talked to that piece of this story, that there's an air, whatever, automatic weapon available.
Because he might kill himself there, too.
Well, he might... Yeah. It was steroids and stuff. You can start getting paranoid and stimulants. Other people is who you start aiming the guns at. That old aphorism, speed kills. I talked to the guys that, you remember the 60s, like speed kills was this big aphorism. I talked to the guys that developed that. Strangely, their names were Smith and Wesson.
Really?
Isn't that weird? Yeah. And they said that Smith was the guy I was talking to, and he said that they didn't mean that it killed the users. It meant the people on speed killed. That's really what they were thinking about.
It's the most corrosive drug to the culture around it. Without question.
And of the human soul in a weird way, right?
I've said this many times in many different shows that every drug is going to have its fair share of negative people and forces around it. You know, when you get into drugs, illegally obtained drugs, there's going to be some negativity. Nothing compares to meth.
Yeah.
The violence, the gross, just the corrosive decay of human spirit that surrounds methamphetamine.
And if I could give a little sidebar here, Orange is the New Black portrays that pretty well this season. My wife and I watched it last night, and one of the thrills of my life, they gave me a shout out.
Nice.
I saw
that on Dr. Drew.
She was stealing stuff out of the pharmaceutical. I didn't quite get the kind of
it had to be.
No,
a white
she
girl,
didn't
right?
want to get addicted two because girls, she saw it on Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
Nobody with colors fooling around with meth.
That's all the white
girls, your Aryan blood.
Yes, the white girls were all. Well, there's a sort of some overlap with the Hispanic girls, but there's the white girls were doing the math mostly.
Sick,
but the pharmaceuticals was everybody. Hey, Rudy, how you been, man?
Let's go get some scante from Popeye in Apple Valley, dog. You know that white boy?
You don't do that anymore, do you?
No, I mean every once in a while, you know, like I work a double shift.
Oh, come on, we had to have it for Sad Girl for a while there.
I was putting it in her food, dog, to lose her fupa.
Now we're posting this tomorrow. We need to know if our caller. Or once, should we like block out his name or whatever?
By the way, Susan's not amused by Rudy.
No,
I'm sorry, Rudy. I'm sorry.
Listen, this girl's all business.
We should probably let Arthur.
Yeah, Arthur. No. We're two things for Arthur. A, we'll maybe blank your name out. Would that be helpful since this thing may go up tomorrow, this podcast?
This thing, you know, the state trooper thing, I think that's all like that's going down Monday, Tuesday. Like nephew's leaving tomorrow. So, I mean, I would like to, I mean, you guys can block my name, but I'm definitely going to replay this for like my parents and my brother and be like, hey, Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike said this.
Okay. And then number two, what more can we do for you? Because, you know, you're in the right space. Both Mike and I are saying that, you know, you're way ahead of the average person with this kind of a burden. And good on you for going to Al-Anon, taking care of yourself, setting your priorities. But the one piece that's missing for me in all of this is the peace and love, so to speak. Is that it's one thing to cut a loved one off when they're unmanageable and way into their disease. If you can do it still with love in your heart, which is hard when somebody's on a violent rage.
Hell yeah.
But the best for him is if you can, you know, keep his well-being also in mind. Is that, Mike?
That is 100% the goal. it's like it's like D-Day, not like the first Iraqi invasion.
Yeah,
there's nothing. You think those guys stormed the beach for because they wanted to kill and murder and violence? No, they were doing it because they knew the overall good that was coming. There was a humanitarian movement. Now, of course, it got nasty, but it was a humanitarian ideal. And it might get nasty, you know, getting in your brother's crosshairs. He's in a terribly violent and probably a dangerous state. But the goal here is to get him to a place of sanctity, and that should always be the prime directive, right? When you're dealing with your brother's
health. If you can get him into treatment, if you can, you know, whatever you want, if he wants help, it's there.
Here, let me say this: if you're going to play this for, especially your mom, I was going to say your parents, but especially your mom, I get it. I'm a parent. I went through it with my parents. No one wants to come to the realization that their kid has a drug problem and that their kid has potentially gone down this path. But look at it this way. Would you rather peel off the Band-Aid now and deal with it, or have to deal with the horrors of knowing that something really devastating happens in the future? He loses custody completely. He hurts someone. He may kill someone. He may kill himself. All these things. This is how addiction ends. It's not glorified or romanticized like it is in the movies. That is inevitably where it's going to go. So would you rather?
It doesn't stay the same.
Would you exactly?
It gets worse.
Would you rather you swallow the medicine now and just admit that your kid has a drug problem and deal with it, or would you rather have to swallow the much bigger gulp of medicine 10 years from now when he goes on a shooting spree in the middle of the Grove?
Could be next week too.
Right.
But and maybe take your mom with you to an Al-Anon meeting. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just gonna say, I already kind of knew what you guys were going to say, but it was really awesome to hear you guys say it so that I can play this back to my mom, my dad, my brother.
All right.
And I only have one last thing. It's I heard Dr. Drew before, when you handle kids with parents who are addicts and stuff, the part that breaks my heart the most is my nephew. And what do I say to him later on or down the road when we start talking
you're going to be saying one of two things. You're going to be saying, "Daddy's got an illness and he's getting better and he's taking care of it," and that's all the kid wants to know,
mm-hmm.
is that he's taking care of it and getting better. He doesn't care if he sees him in 6 days or 6 months. He wants to know that Daddy's getting better and doing taking care of it,
and he's taking care of it because he loves you.
Or you're going to be saying, "Daddy had a horrible illness; it's fatal," and that's what happened. Sort of the two things you're going to be saying to your nephew. I just the way it goes.
Yeah.
And in either case, you got to make sure he understands nothing to do with you. It's a bad illness.
And say, one of these days, kids, you're really going to know how to party.
Yeah.
You are going to be a champion.
I'm hoping he joins a punk band, gets a little bit out of control, but then comes back with it.
Pulls it back together. Yeah.
Not funny.
All right, my friend. Thanks, Arthur. Really, really, our hearts with you and your family. It's tough. Very tough.
It was awesome talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
Right, thanks, buddy. Man.
Take care. Yeah, it's that hard line. You look a little breathtaking. You all right?
Well, this is how I felt when I did Love Line. I'm just like, I have nothing funny to say. I'm an asshole. Can I say that? I'm a bad person if I speak. I have nothing of value to say besides good luck. And I think all these jokes I could throw in there. Then I'm like, I could have my Bill Maher moment.
We have a sex question next, so you can be funny.
Thank you
for that.
Maybe I have a distorted view of it because I hosted Love Line for a long time, but Gallo's humor in those situations actually can be really appreciated.
You have no idea how backstage the caretakers have to joke with themselves to keep their sanity.
But it's different because you're I have it for my own stuff. I have I think that's where Bill Maher was wrong. He made a self-deprecating joke, but he's not an African American person,
right?
You know what I mean?
His family weren't house
slaves. Right? Yeah. That's what.
Yeah,
I have.
But you made a Mexican joke, and you're not Mexican.
Oh, but I'm racist.
It's funny you bring that up. As I put up a picture of my daughter and I picking strawberries yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't even bother me one bit, but people are making the very kind of low-hanging fruit Mexican jokes about working the fields, right? And I was thinking, why is it that that's
okay?
Open season, but can you imagine if it was if I had an Asian friend and he got in a car accident, you better believe it's going through my mind. I'd be like, but I'm not putting that on social media because I'd be like, who knows who reads this? Okay, I could really rub someone the wrong way.
We got another call coming up. It's Katie. Katie, you there?
Well, yeah. Hold on one second. I have to hang. Bye, Arthur.
Bye, Arthur.
It is interesting that the people who it's okay. An Asian comedian has said this to me, that Asian people are the only people you can make fun of while they're in front of you without going, "Hey, is it okay if I say this?" And it's really messed up.
Yeah.
don't know.
I went to a high school that's like 80% Asian. So, I mean, it's very strange. But also because the inter-Asian racism is so funny. Listen, like you want to hear a Chinese guy talk about a Filipino and you're just like, whoa, slow your roll.
Ali Wong has a great joke about that. I forget what her ethnicity is or her husband.
Chinese.
But she's Chinese and Vietnamese or something. She goes,
Korean.
No. She goes, Chinese and Vietnamese, and my husband is like Cambodian and Filipino or something. It's fantastic because we spent all of our time shitting on Koreans. Yeah.
All right.
Hispanic, same way.
So we have
Canadian. I know. They're Nicaragua versus El Salvador versus Colombia. It's all lots of inter. You know this?
No, I was in Japan last year, and I was with some people, Japanese people in the car, as you do in Japan. And then there was all these people who were Asian who were just in the street, just like keeping the car from moving. And he goes, Chinese people. And I'm like, what is happening?
Okay, we have a caller.
Okay, racism. Katie, you there?
Hello.
Hey, Katie. It's Dr. Drew, Mike Catherwood.
Hey, baby.
Taylor Williamson.
Hi, Katie. I'm told I can make jokes during your questions.
Yeah, so don't make any. Don't pay any attention to Taylor.
Thank you.
So go ahead, Katie. What's happening?
Well, I was calling. I guess I have a love line question for you since Mike is there.
Yes.
My husband and I have been married for 10 years. We have, 4 kids, 3 together. I have a stepson. We still have a really active sex life, you know.
Nice.
I would say, you know, we managed to make it work with 4 kids in the house. But in 10 years, I have never been able to climax with him. And so I can climax on my own if I'm, you know, doing it myself, but it doesn't matter what I try with him. And we've tried, I mean, I think I would like to think that we're very open about sex and, you know, we've tried lots of sex toys and, clitoral stimulation during sex and, lots of things that we can think of, lots of different positions. And in 10 years, it just has never happened.
And so just to be clear, wait, hang on a second. So no orgasm with oral sex.
I hate oral sex and no.
Well, that's the problem.
I don't like how it feels. And he actually enjoys giving it to me, and I actually really don't like how it feels
Isn't
at all.
An unfair universe. The guy loves munching box, his wife hates it.
But maybe there's a technical issue here. You know what I mean? Maybe she doesn't know what's required, and he doesn't know how to do what's required. You know what I mean?
Have you considered divorce?
When I tell my girlfriends I don't like oral sex, they usually either say there's something wrong with you or he's not doing it right.
Yeah.
And that's usually the 2 options I get, which are not good options. I don't like either of them.
Is there any truth to maybe the fact that because you guys have made it such an issue, and it sounds like your husband's understanding and loving. I mean, he wants this for you. He's not like – we used to take those calls on Loveline where the guy was just a dick. Never orgasmed mate, but he hates when I bring my vibrator in the bed and he won't allow me to touch myself. And
right.
You're like, what do you mean he won't allow you? In Afghanistan? But you're, it's not like your husband's invested in your sexual health as well. Maybe mentally you guys are so focused, hyper-focused, that it's like killing – the vibe, you
maybe.
Know what I mean?
The anxiety about it.
There's no kind of like organic spontaneity to the sex because you're so hyper focused on.
And why?
I think that's true for me. I mean, like for example, with our first child, we had trouble conceiving. So you know, we tried for 3 years to conceive our child, and you know when you're trying to conceive and it's difficult, like sex.
No, I don't know that. I'm Mexican.
I don't know, difficult
to conceive.
It becomes a sort of a technical chore. You know, you're sort of doing
I breathe on women and they're pregnant.
It almost kind of feels like that now, where it's been 10 years of unsuccess. So now it's just for me, it's like, yeah, it kind of does take the joy out of it a little bit.
Okay.
Because
so that's
I'm
something
so
to pay.
Focused on wanting the end goal and I don't ever get there.
That's something
so.
To pay attention to. And then what about doing what you do on your own with him there?
That voodoo that you do?
And slowly moving him and sort of so he can see what it is and know what that is and sort of move him into the equation.
I mean, that's what we've been doing. And honestly, it just kind of, after 10 years, feels kind of lonely just because I feel like I'm just masturbating in front of my husband for 10 years. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right, right. No, I get it.
So,
but
yeah.
How
so
about,
that's what
okay,
we've been
how about,
doing. And he tries to get involved, and sometimes I'll try and have him like touch me while I do, you know, like while I do that and stuff like that. But anytime he's involved, like honestly, what I usually do is kick him out of bed and say go somewhere else, and I'll just be by myself.
Well, there's
because
the
anytime
problem.
He's in, yeah. Anytime he's involved, it takes longer, and I get frustrated, and like it just harder.
What I was gonna say is that have him, you guys, next time there's a sesh. Really put aside some serious time though, like so you know the kids are all asleep or whatever, or even a weekend away, so that you know there's you can put in a couple hours.
Yeah,
you know, I know that sounds crazy, and it is. That's like 40 sessions for me, but but to put in all the time to do 90% of it to stuff that isn't even
like,
sexual
like
touching,
massage, or just quiet, just
let him massage you, oils, what the whole thing. Don't touch his Schwanzstucke, and he shouldn't touch you. And then when it comes time to for you to just do it yourself on your own apparatus there, have him stay with you and massage your shoulders and kiss your ears and stuff so that it's not
– so you're connected.
Yeah. Don't like be like, okay, honey, it's time for us to deal with the clitoris. Touch my left lab and I'll touch my right. And then have it be more like let's just continue the massage you're giving to me on my back while I do – my business.
So Sean Sugar, sure you, yeah, Susan did. Sean Sugar, so you saw Young Frankenstein recently? Is that what happened here?
That's one of those that does not
get away. So
a lot of 70s comedy. Tell me what you think, Taylor. It does not age well.
Dude, I made a girl watch Young Frankenstein with me, and I think I ruined our relationship. Because I was like, this is the greatest movie of all time.
That's enough to break up with
it. It's
chick.
Hard to sit through, but it's so good, though, it's not, good. Though.
Colin Quinn says that he judges a relationship by the girl's reaction to Confederacy of Dunces. If she reads it and says, I didn't get it, dumped immediately.
Or if he cheats on her on his honeymoon.
There's that. So I want to make sure we're not missing something, Katie, which is you have a sexual trauma history of any type?
No, I don't have any sexual trauma or anything like that.
Any abandonment? Hold a second.
We got married when I was very young.
How
I was
old?
19, so he is the only person like I've ever had sexual experiences with.
That's why. That's a big factor.
Yeah.
That's a deal.
Yeah.
And then
it's not bad, though.
Any abandonment?
No, it's by no means a negative, but that definitely it's a much easier solution when a girl says, I've never been able to achieve orgasm at 30 with my husband of 2 years. Before I met him, I was getting anally railed and I could have I was squirting and stuff. You know, it's just there's a big difference when you have like that kind of adaptation.
If he were to hear that podcast, he would step outside and shoot him. just FYI. But so any abandonment issues for you? I'm trying to see if there's any intimacy block here. So go ahead.
You mean like with family issues? Probably. I didn't have a wonderful childhood.
What happened?
You know, nothing sexually, but I was raised in a really violent childhood. I have a mother who's severely bipolar and a dad, like they were fighting in my house constantly, like cops were at our house constantly. My dad would go away for months at a time or weeks at a time. And
so that's the abandonment.
You know,
so there's abandonment and domestic violence, both very troubling for kids when they're growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's highly associated with anxiety-type disorders. And I'm wondering if some individual therapy might not help for you, some trauma therapy to sort of
ecstasy
hook you back up again. No. Well, some people have used that. But I honestly, because some of this is sort of a block, right? And we got to get your sort of system regulating all what Mike has advocated for you is a great idea, and I would go down that path.
Ecstasy?
No.
The massage,
everything. But if that doesn't work, then really, ecstasy. You know, that it leaves a mark on people being sort of not just abandoned, but also being witness to domestic violence when they're growing up. The aphorism that the mental health professionals use is that. The guys become warriors, and the girls become worriers when they've been exposed to this stuff.
Am I a girl? Is that what you're saying?
No, you're just Jewish.
Well, you just an Ashkenazi Jew become warriors. Oh, okay.
But Katie, also on top of that, like seriously, like your dad just going away for months at a time. Don't normalize that. Yeah, that's insane levels of abandonment. Yeah. I can't imagine my parents were just like, you'll be good.
Yeah.
Now don't minimize that.
Yeah.
You've been through a lot, and I don't mean that to say like, oh, you're broken. What I'm saying is like, be kind to yourself. Also, you had four kids in a decade.
Yeah.
That's way intense. Yeah. Physically, that's hard on you. Yeah. Emotionally, I can't even imagine. I have one kid. I can barely hold it together. So what you've been through at a very young age is tremendous. Maybe it's just that you and your husband both need a breather.
Yeah.
Just, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, just like, hey, hold each other's hand and say, like, we got to press the reset button on our emotional state. Because four kids in a decade at 29, by the way, that's
– held the husband?
Well, I'm 30. He's 31.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Katie, I hope some of that helps. I really appreciate you contacting us. It's nice to flex these muscles again with Mike around.
Yeah. I think I helped a lot.
Well, Taylor,
But I might have one more quick question.
For
just
Katie?
Because, no, for another caller, but Katie was amazing.
Yeah, yes. Katie, thanks so much, and keep us posted.
Thank
okay?
you.
You sound very hot, too. I don't know if that helps.
Thanks, Mike.
So, Thanks, Katie. So you were also going to tell us about Taylor your situation with your mom and your personal habits.
I grew up in right close to here.
By the way, dog is farting it up big time. If you guys
crushing,
thanks for sharing.
You know what I love about dogs is that they, you know, I was watching the NBA finals. Elite athletes have a basketball face, or guys. Eddie Van Halen has a guitar face. When you're doing something intense, dogs. The same face they use when they're sitting on your lap cutting farts is the same face the dogs on ESPN2 at 3 in the morning when they're leaping off a bridge to catch a frisbee. It's the same face. They're just like stone face. They're like, watch me leap. It's so funny. But
I like that dogs require you to announce that there was a fart in the room.
Yeah. Well, it's taking my breath away.
Well, when he lays in that position, it usually means
it's
he's
aiming
very relaxed.
Right towards me. So.
My mom, I grew up pretty close to here in like a really old house, and there was no locks on the doors, so my mom would just walk in on me beating off in my bathroom so much that I just, instead of being embarrassed, I would start yelling at her. Like, it got to the point that I'd be like, "Listen, Mom." I had this conversation with my mom. I was probably like 17. I said, "Listen, if the door is closed on my bathroom and I'm in there for more than 1 minute, I'm shitting or I'm beating off. Either way, you are not welcome. So just go ahead and just take that as a sign."
This poor mom's coming in with towels. You know?
It's and like, she's always like, "Oh, sorry, honey." And again, my mom's like 4'11".
Do you start screaming at her?
Yeah, I'd be like, "What the fuck, Mom?"
Oh, God, you scared
the dog.
Fucking
beating off, Mom! I'd be like, my dad be downstairs like, just laughing.
Okay, so we have Taylor on the line.
Okay, Taylor, you there?
I'm right here.
Yeah.
Hey, Taylor, thanks for getting with us.
Very funny, Taylor, same name humor. That's what's happening.
Oh. Fascinating.
And hockey, too, you know.
And I'm a hockey player, too.
No, Bob is in a hockey game today.
Oh, right.
Okay, Taylor, what's up?
So I'm doing a hockey camp up in Bale in a couple weeks, and I was wondering if I could get some advice from you guys. Like, if there's such a thing as too much protein powder or sports drink while I'm doing that, or
how old are you?
Advice for not dying. 26, 27.
Our basic advice, I'm channeling my inner Mike here, is that at 26, you shouldn't eat anything other than
lots of water.
Lots of water, a carefully balanced diet. But how much, you know, he could do creatine. I'm not sure he should do that. You know what I mean?
I can't reasonably say don't, but at the same time, it's certainly not crucial.
The protein powder isn't going to do much of anything.
I'm sure they feed you.
Yeah.
You know?
Just eat more protein, more food. Your body will convert what it converts. Is there too much protein powder? Well, protein's not great for your kidneys over long periods of time.
Yeah, but they've done studies that show
that big
was,
a deal.
The real damaging kidneys they did on were like sick people.
Right.
It's not buff 26-year-olds.
Well, here's what we've noticed that in people with end-stage renal disease, we can hasten their demise by burdening the kidney with protein. So they extrapolated back and said, therefore, it must be bad for kidneys. And that's been in the vapors forever.
Wait, really demanding things like hockey, especially, you know, if you're going to go hours and hours a day, two or three sessions a day,
fluids,
like at a camp, the demands for your body are certainly high, but they're much different than a hypertrophy athlete, meaning someone who's building muscle. That's their main goal, a fitness athlete, a bodybuilder, something like that. So people oftentimes, they make a big mistake, especially young athletes. A young football player, a young hockey player, a young endurance athlete makes the mistake of taking diets from Flex Magazine, thinking that that's appropriate. And the reality is the only people who need 1, 2, 3 grams of protein per pound of body weight are people who are trying to gain muscle cells. And that's not what you're doing in a hockey
camp.
And
even then, at your age, you probably eat carbohydrates and build it just just as well. I mean, right. Your body will, your testosterone will put it towards muscle.
Make sure you get plenty of water. If you want, even pack some electrolytes. You know,
Hydrolyte. That stuff Hydrolyte I'm using, I'm a big advocate for, is for fluid replacement. It's great.
So are they the fizzy pills?
Yeah, they're the hold up. There is right yeah. there.
That's the jam. Those fizzy, what do they call that when it's fizzy? There's a word for it. Effervescent.
Tablets. There's this right there.
Electrolytes. Yeah. Is a really good
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
For athletes.
I remember people calling into Loveline and you get mad when they'd be like, I'm trying to gain weight. And you just be like, eat lots of food. Eat lots of peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
That's sort of what we would do, right? Remember?
Well, I also, the same people who they say, no, you don't understand. I eat so much. I can't gain any weight. They're lying. They don't know what eating a lot is.
Yeah.
Are the same people who go, I had this guy email me the other day. He's like, I'm 250 pounds at 5'6". I need to lose a lot of weight. But I've been following a 1,500 calorie a day diet for the last – and I go, no, you haven't. No, you haven't. Trust me. Everyone, even elite athletes, grossly underestimate their caloric intake and grossly overestimate their output. And people be like, I burned about 1,200 calories at the gym. I go, no, you didn't. 1,200 calories is a very hard hour-long row. A very hard hour-long row. Yeah. That 215 for every 500 meters.
If you get 500 or 600 calories an hour, you're doing okay.
And so – I always have to deal with it on either of two ends. I get the 17-year-old football player who's like, I eat like crazy. I just can't get any weight. I go, no. Eat like crazy means you're on the verge of vomiting four times a day.
All the time. Yeah. That's what I tell them. I said, eat till you're vomiting all the time.
And deadlift and squat, those are your best friends. So they're like, what do you bench, bro? I go, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but that's not a smartest answer. Eat till you're vomiting.
No, that we mean it. We mean because the people who really have trouble gaining weight don't eat a lot.
Yeah.
They really don't. Or need to eat even
tremendous
more.
Tremendous ectomorphs. That's what I call it when you're super skinny, you can't gain weight. That's a thing. But they'll be like three square meals. They're like, I eat like crazy. I was like, no. Like everything you drink is whole milk. That's what I mean. And every time you drink it, maybe add a little heavy cream. Eat a bucket of fried chicken to wash it down. Like that's what you got to do when you're that guy.
Yeah. All right, listen, Taylor, we got to go. Mike, thank you for sitting in for Bob. It's been fun.
Should we say goodbye to the caller?
Yep.
And thank him for
bye, Taylor. Thank you so much for calling.
Bye,
appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. You guys live?
Bye, straight Taylor.
Wait, I'm straight.
What? No,
I'm not. It's the Clay Aiken thing. Oh, God. Can we? There's got to be some. I'll be Ruben Studdard. Can I be? Did he win?
He won.
Oh, yeah.
Is he dead?
I don't think so.
You can be Michelle Kwan.
Can I be? I'll be. Does she get second place?
Michelle Kwan, yeah.
She's or Nancy Kerrigan.
It's got to be a better option than Michelle Kwan. I mean, respect to her; she's a wonderful. But I'm a man, you know.
No, second place.
But she was a huge star.
The best second place, America and Vietnam.
The point
that's
is
the best second place ever, right?
America not having one that did not prevent you from having a thriving career. Very important.
You're so kind and supportive. Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, I was really excited you won because I chose you
way early
when it was you were in the top 10. Right?
I was so excited when you messaged me too.
I
got a tweet.
I was a big fan.
You guys in the
not anymore though. Not at all.
I don't watch TV as much anymore. But I'm
you may have
busy
been
working.
You may have been number two on America's Got Talent. You're number one in my heart.
Really?
Yeah.
You really mean that?
So, and for me, you have to watch all through episode 9 of Orange is the New Black.
You're such a pompous dick. You're just like, oh, it's not episode 9. I go, oh, God, a year before I get there. No, just binge it, Drew says. Where do you think I have 9 hours on my hand to binge it?
When did we start? We got pretty quickly through it.
I know. Your kids are 25.
Yeah.
And you just have that ability.
You're right.
You work 900 hours a day for 2 days a week.
No, they were the ones pushing the binge. Too, yeah. So
I'll have to start season 1. That's 7 years of my life.
I don't know about that.
But I'm happy.
That's
for
a task.
I hear it's a great show.
It is. It's well written.
I was at Jason Biggs was at the Passover I went to, and he's not Jewish.
God, I forgot that he was even in the series. He was at the very beginning.
Is Jenny Mullen Jewish? What was he doing at a Passover?
This is a very random. Oh, just a family friend. This L.A. show, but stupid L.A. But his wife's sister married a Jewish guy.
I love Jenny.
She's so cool.
I love her.
But because Gary Marshall passed away, everyone was saying that he's the most famous non-Jewish, Jewish-looking guy alive right now.
He is quite Jewy for a non-Jew.
But he's like yeah, I am.
Gilbert's up. I mean, Gilbert's very...
Oh, he's a Jewish.
Is he?
Oh, come on.
Gilbert Gottfried?
I'm thinking of someone who's like, you're like, how is it? Oh, Corolla. Corolla's very where you're like, really, you're not.
But that's where the Gilbert thing came in.
Was
he's Italian?
Was the weightlifter the guy who's Jewish? Right.
I don't know.
The guy with his family is the drug addicts and the attack. I'm trying to do like
I have such a weird
attacking Jews again.
No, it's your joke. My favorite thing on Loveline forever was you guys would be like someone calling the craziest thing and you'd be like Jewish, right?
Oh no, it's Adam. That's Adam. No, he'd go.
You do it sometime.
Well, maybe I'm recalling
it. It is worth doing. And people are like, well, that's so racist. No, it's not. Stop. Guy calls up. He's like, I got three kids, like by like five. About five different women.
And Adam would go like, Jewish?
Mr. Goldstein? You know, I don't hardly ever meet any Jewish alcoholic addicts. I just not.
They're addicts. They don't get alcoholism. It's weird.
That's overeaters a lot. Right?
Food, pills.
That's, really?
Yep. And pot sometimes too. But
it's surprising because I go to meetings and you just
it's a weird interesting subset. But licks the Chabad house is all right.
Is that what it is?
Chabad. Yeah. It's all Jewish. It's designed. It was established originally for, you know, by the rabbi. Mm. But it treats all comers now. What's the matter?
Oh, I didn't know that
Chabad.
I knew Chabad, but I didn't know that they did other things like that.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, I love all right, guys. Good shish Chabad.
We got to go.
Scientology I got invited to Narconon meeting once.
Ooh.
I'm sorry. I don't want to leave. I'm sorry.
We don't want you to leave. We can do two hours like Loveline. But
super hot chicks.
So where do we find everybody at Mike Catherwood?
At Mike Catherwood on all social media formats.
And at Dr. Drew.
And?
At Teeler Comedy, basically. Whatever.
And, you know, I'm First Lady of Love. And also go to drdrew.com and find all the podcasts that we offer. And if you just can't find something, go there. You can probably find it.
Yeah, get on the contact list. Email us. We'll try to accommodate everybody.
You're in the top three coolest Taylors in show business, for sure.
Taylor Swift?
No, he's way ahead of Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift may be more successful. He's way cooler.
Really?
Yeah. Hawkins is cooler than you.
Oh, I mean, come on.
He's a little cooler than you.
Who's Taylor Hawkins?
He's a
drummer for the Foo Fighters.
Oh, sorry.
He was the drummer for Lannis. And then...
What happened?
All right, guys, we got to go. Wrap this
up. Join the Foo Fighters.
Okay, I want to thank our friends for the Integrity Care Card. It's a brilliant idea, and we're going to hear a little more from them. It's, again, a way you can give somebody support financially, but control and monitor how they use that money.
Give them a credit card. Yeah. They can't buy alcohol or go to ATMs or bars.
Just a brilliant idea. All right.
It really is.
We'll see you next time.
Lately, I've been waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing for somebody, dishing what you're talking, friend. And it's 3 a.m. Despite the whiskey, I've always been risky. And babe, trust me and see, I'm not the kind of guy to give life a half try. And if you went back in time with me, there's ghosts and there's secrets, but you don't need to hear this. So let's stick with the spirit for now. Lately, I've been waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing, somebody dishing what you're talking, friend. And it's 3:30 a.m. And it wasn't her age, her eyes, hazel or sage, or the way she plays the games you think she plays. But it's not about her hair, blind, long, black as an early dawn, or what town she's from anymore. No, 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 and I'll take it as a sign that her sitting here tonight means the world fits right to the morn. Lately, I've been waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing for somebody, dishing what you're talking, friend. And I know it's 6 a.m. With all of this chatter, I don't care for matters of sadness, so let's let this be. And there's no need to force it, but I ain't bullshit, and you seem legit to me. So I'll take it as a sign that fiction what you're talking, friend. But then again, who can recall with the whiskey and all what the point in it all really is? And all that I know, dear, is that night still and clear, the ring in my ears for life. So wherever you may be, I hope you smile a day for me, 'cause I smile every time I